Chapter 17. Too far down the Thokwa hole.
Priestesses can dominate a victim, Kimoriel said to Zaknafane, the two of them moving with Jarlaxle along the underdark tunnels back toward the deep gnome position.
Not like this, Zak replied, and not for the first time. I have felt the manipulations of priestesses all my life.
Zak paused for a moment, then added, Or perhaps it is possible. I admit that I have never battled a priestess in a fair fight, where she had me by surprise or had time to prepare. He stopped suddenly and shook his head vigorously, then roared in anger.
Was it like that? Kimoriel asked.
Zaknafane took a step toward the psionicist, his swords coming into his hands. Jarlaxle was fast to intercept him.
If he ever does that again, Zak said, pointing one sword over Jarlaxle's shoulder at the distant Kimoriel.
It wasn't, Jarlaxle started to say, but Zak cut him off, his outrage too great to hear anything above the blood pounding in his ears.
I will kill you, Zak promised. Do not ever slip into my mind again, because I will kill you.
It wasn't him, Jarlaxle yelled in Zak's face. He acted on my command.
Before he could think of anything to reply, Zaknafane drove his forehead into Jarlaxle's face, knocking the rogue back two steps.
Zak brought his swords in and got slammed brutally, more powerfully than he had ever imagined possible, a wave of energy that scrambled his brain and had his legs shaking wildly, his swords dropping from his hands.
Enough, enough, he heard Jarlaxle say. But suddenly, from far, far away, he saw the stone floor of the corridor coming and thought it would probably hurt.
Surprisingly, though, he didn't feel a thing, at least not until he woke up some time later, sitting against a wall, Jarlaxle sitting across from him.
You need to stop that, Jarlaxle told him.
Yes, I told Kimoriel to do that to you, and yes, I understand the violation involved. Of course I do. Why do you think I wear this eye patch after all?
We needed to know.
Was it the same? Kimoriel asked from back into the side.
Zak glared at him.
Here, Jarlaxle said, reaching behind himself under his cloak and bringing forth a finely made bullwhip, one Zaknafane surely recognized. You found it, Zak said, his tone changing.
The magic in this whip was truly wondrous, its cracking end able to cut a small tear into the plane of fire itself.
Kimoriel found it as a gift to you, Jarlaxle explained.
Zaknafane didn't bother trying to suppress the doubt in his responding expression.
The ruling council had remanded it, Jarlaxle said. They thought it a weapon too threatening to matrons, and one suitable only to a matron, who of course prefer the snake-headed scourges that signify their station. They wanted it put out of the way, probably in no small part because of who it was who had put it to deadly use.
He was speaking of Zak, of course, and the weapon master took the offered whip and rolled it out to get its feel once more. Zaknafane had always enjoyed this type of weapon and knew how to use it expertly, or at least, he once had known the expert handling of a bullwhip. But that, he mused, was more than a century before.
There, the hurt is mended. Now, Zaknafane, answer Kimoriel, Jarlaxle demanded.
I brought you out here on your request, I remind you. We three are walking into a potential trap. We need to know.
The reminder of why they were out here, or more specifically, of why he was out here, calmed Zak considerably.
The telepathic intrusion, was it the same? Kimoriel demanded again.
Zak considered it carefully for a few moments, then shook his head.
No, this was different. Less demanding. More trick, less pure force. I don't know how to explain it, but with your violation, it didn't seem as evil.
Would an illithid seem more evil? Jarlaxle asked Kimoriel, who shook his head.
Zaknafane stared hard at the psionicist, who was clearly thinking deeply on the information, and seemed to the weapon master to know more than he was letting on. He didn't trust that one at all. But he was glad to have the whip back, at least. The gnome crept out of the quiet camp, most of the miners napping, the cook and the miner assigned to help him busy at their tasks, and Borough Warden Belwar and that insufferable Maltza block nowhere to be found, likely deep inside the new tunnel the industrious miners had dug to inspect the thus far disappointing load of Arandir coming from it. Simbin paused as he moved into the tunnel past the warded gate, reconsidering his plans here, and not for the first time. "What are you doing, you damn dumb gnome?" he had asked himself 100 times. The first time, perhaps the first 10 times, Simbin had almost thrown up his hands and run to Borough Warden Belwar with his confession. Every time, though, had come those feelings that he wasn't getting his due, that he was working so hard and so loyally for King Schnicktick, and with a title of Borough Warden yet to be even hinted at. But now, for some time, he didn't try to convince himself and justify this. He was simply too far along, too far down the Thokwa hole, as the Zwerfnebli said of such emotional traps. He had no choice here now, so it really wasn't a question any longer. Somehow, he had been lured in past the point of no return. Once he was free of any wards or sentries, the gnome picked up his pace, moving through the tunnels as fast as his short legs would carry him. Perhaps he should have been more cautious, pausing and listening for umber hulks or other potential monsters. But so determined was he to put this distasteful episode behind him that he abandoned caution. Besides, if anything dangerous was about, wouldn't the drow have taken care of it already? He saw the drow priestesses, both of them this time, Duquelve and Ikara, waiting for him. Duquelve pacing nervously, Ikara calmly sitting on a rock, fiddling with her fingernail as if something had gotten stuck under it. He slowed in his approach and glanced to the side, looking to the rock piles in a side tunnel, where he had noted some sentient, predatory ooze slithering about during a previous journey here. It seemed clear, but probably wasn't, Simbin noted, for few things in the Underdark could hide as well as the malleable oozes. "It is good to see you, clever gnome," Ikara said when Simbin rushed up to them. "Where is it?" Priestess Duquelve demanded, not hiding her anger. The gnome fumbled about his belt at his right hip to produce a small pouch, then reached behind, under his cloak, and pulled off 2 more. He presented the 3 to the priestesses. Duquelve snatched one and pulled it open, reaching in and pulling forth a small handful of green and black ore. She looked to Ikara, who had taken the other 2. "Which is a bag of holding?" she demanded. Ikara opened each bag and reached in, then shook her head. "I've no such item," Simbin told them. "It would be a lot easier if I did." "Then where is the rest of my ore?" Duquelve demanded. I did my best," Simbin said, rocking nervously from foot to foot. "The ore is not light, and ye cannot expect me to carry a large sack out of Dun Arandir, as the Borough Warden's gone to naming the camp. They're watching, don't doubt. Watching who comes in and who goes out." "I do not care," Duquelve shouted at him. "You haven't enough here to make a gauntlet." "A bit at a time," Simbin said, backing away with every word. "How much time do you think we have, foolish gnome? Do you expect us to stay out here in the Underdark for 10 days while you ferry a handful at a time?" 3 handfuls. Simbin said, and he swallowed hard when he saw the look his snide remark invoked on the face of the drow priestess. "Enough, Princess Duquelve," Ikara said. "The gnome is frightened, and not without reason." Duquelve threw up her arms and turned aside, muttering under her breath. "We do need you to do better," Ikara told Simbin. "They count the ore," he replied pleadingly. "Not exact. But Belwar's knowing how much is there, and so will know how much ain't. They catch me and it's all done here." "Perhaps he is right," Ikara said. Duquelve spun about, her red eyes wide. "Perhaps we should change our tactics then,
and not rely on Matron Mother Bayenry's reaction to a shining suit of Arandir, Ikara explained.
Duquelve looked at her curiously for a few heartbeats, then let a smile spread wide as she nodded.
Simvin watched it all, still not catching on.
Tell us the location of all the defensive wards, Ikara said to Simvin.
The gnome felt his face fall as his jaw went slack.
That weren't our deal.
This is our new deal, Ikara said insistently.
That weren't our deal,
Simvin said again more loudly, and he found it hard to get the words past his lips, as if his voice suddenly wasn't his own.
This is our new deal, Ikara said again, this time calmly. It all came clear to Simvin then, the answer to his dilemmas, both with the priestesses here and with the dangers of Belwar back in Dun Arandir.
This is our new deal, Ikara said a third time.
This is our new deal, Simvin recited, the statement at first surprising him, but then settling on him as his obvious preference.
He saw Duquelve and Ikara exchange smiles then, and knew that he had done the right thing. He was glad to please these new friends who so valued him.
Jarlaxle bent low and peered under the stones, watching the ooze as it slipped through a small crack in the wall, disappearing from sight.
Amazing, he said. He stood and turned and looked to Zacnaphane and Kamoriel.
There is more afoot here, Kamoriel warned, echoing Zac's sentiments.
This thing is gone? Jarlaxle asked.
It is confused, answered the psionicist. It will be confused for a long time. I do not anticipate it will bother us again.
And if it does, you will be ready? Kimuriel just stared at him.
Come on, the corner is not far ahead, Zac told them.
He started away, but paused and looked back to the stones.
You are sure that thing didn't know we were coming?
How certain can I be about an ooze, or whatever it was? Kimuriel replied. I sensed it. I attacked it. I won.
But if it somehow signaled ahead to our possible enemies...
Why do you even think it is connected to any of that? Kimuriel asked, as if the question was obvious and Zack's conclusions not.
We think the gnome is dominated. You sense the creature, ooze, whatever, because of its mental energies. The connection seems evident.
Only because you dismiss coincidence, which is what I would expect from a warrior.
I don't believe in coincidence.
As I just said.
Whatever the case, Jarlaxle intervened, before it could go any further. Perhaps this creature is some kind of mind plague, and is infecting the Zwerf Nebli independent of the Hansrens. Perhaps it is not connected and merely came to this place because it sensed other magical or psionic activity.
It does not matter, and our time here is short. Let us learn what we may.
Zac and Kamoriel continued to exchange stares for a bit longer. Then Zac turned and moved off, traveling along corridors he recognized from his first visit here.
His pace was quick, not just because of his familiarity, but because of the formidability of his two companions. He did slow as he neared the rubble he recognized as the pile from which he had witnessed the first gnome and drow encounter, however, where he heard voices up ahead. The three came to the corner. Jarlaxle peered around, then pulled back and took out a strange-looking, funnel-shaped device. He put the narrow end in his ear and leaned out, the flared end toward the speakers.
Priestess Duquelve Hansren, he signaled to his companions. His expression changed as he continued to listen, a look of concern coming over him.
The gnome is betraying his people fully, he signed. I think the Hansrens mean to attack them.
Alone? Kimoriel's hand asked.
He is dominated, fully, Zac interjected.
Jarlaxle looked to Kimoriel. Free him.
Kimoriel nodded and took a step toward the corner, but Zacnaphane then said aloud,
We should be gone.
The other two looked at him in horror, shocked that he would break their silence, but they understood when they followed Zac's gaze back the way they had come to see a trio of drow warriors and a priestess,
a priestess who appeared quite naked, running toward them, though still some distance away.
"Scatter, find your way," Jarlaxle said, and ran off, turning down the nearest side passage, Camoriel at his heels. Zacnaphane, though, had a different idea, and instead of following, he went around the bend, full speed, leaping, whip in hand. The deep gnome cried out in surprise, and the two drow priestesses spun on him, their shock quickly turning to anger and to action, to Quelvhunsrin lifting her scourge, the other waggling her fingers. Zack raced past the deep gnome, and Duquelve moved to intercept him, the living snakes of her three-headed whip lifting and coiling to strike. But Zack struck first, his bullwhip reaching out tantalizingly toward the scourge and the priestess holding it. A sudden snap of his wrist brought the tip snapping across, and Zack called on the deeper powers of the weapon, drawing a line of fire across the air right before the scourge. Already in motion, the snakes struck, one, then the second, and two snake heads fell free, severed as they crossed the planar tear. Priestess Duquelve cried out in horror. To a drow priestess, nothing was more sacred than her scourge, and that made Zack smile. Zacnaphane never slowed, though, running by the pair, expecting to be hit hard by some spell of the second priestess. It came as another blast of mental power, an attempt once more to dominate him, to break him immediately to her will. So much like the first time, and in that moment, Zack was certain that this one and the ooze back there were somehow connected. He fought through it, staggering a bit, and was quick to throw himself around the next corner, almost running into a pair of Hunsrin soldiers who were waiting for him.
"A naked priestess," Jarlaxle quietly muttered, surprised and shocked by the revelation. For indeed he knew what that meant. She was naked because she had been a slithering pile of black ooze only a short while before. "She," he quipped, for what did gender really mean to such a being? One thing he did know. She was a handmaiden of Lolth, a Yokel, and very likely so was the other non-Hunsrin priestess who had come out to deal with the deep gnomes to dominate this poor fellow. He sprinted along a fairly straight and even corridor, coming past an opening with a slight turn to ensure that no enemies were hiding within that alcove. He skidded to a stop, noting no enemy but a friend. Camoriel waved him into the alcove. Though how the strange drow had ever gotten to this point before him, Jarlaxle could only guess. He seemed to do that a lot regarding Camoriel. "They're not far behind," he whispered. "Far enough," Camoriel replied. "You know the truth now, of course."
"Handmaidens.
Yokel indeed. And two of them, at least. What is this business? Why does Lolth intervene on behalf of House Hunsrin?"
"We don't know that it's Lolth," Jarlaxle replied.
"Two handmaidens," Camoriel said dryly, as close to sarcasm as the emotionless drow could manage.
"Two handmaidens who are causing trouble. They do so because they enjoy it," Jarlaxle argued, though his conviction was thin enough for Camoriel to notice without even trying to telepathically worm into Jarlaxle's thoughts. Was House Hunsrin in the favor of the Spider Queen? Was Lolth herself orchestrating this bold move by the Hunsrins? And if so, what did that signal to Bregan de Earth? Jarlaxle didn't like the possibilities here. He had worked for centuries to scrape out some measure of respect and power within the matriarchal society, for himself and for those many drow who associated with Bregan de Earth. But they were mostly just men, after all. Jarlaxle could count the number of women in the mercenary band on one hand, with fingers to spare. Had Lolth finally grown weary of allowing such an elevation of a band of men? He considered Matron Mother Bayenri's reaction, and there, too, he didn't like the possibilities. She would not be happy if Bregan de Earth, which was, after all, a willing extension of her power, wound up greatly diminished by the Hunsrin maneuver. Jarlaxle peered out from the alcove, feeling very uncertain. "We can't let them succeed here," he signed to his companion.
"You would risk stifling handmaidens of Lolth?" Camoriel replied, his hands moving rather awkwardly. Despite their predicament, Jarlaxle almost laughed aloud at the childlike movements. If fingers could stutter,
Kimuriel's had just done so. Rarely did the psionicist resort to the silent hand code of the drow. Usually he would simply communicate silently with telepathic messages. Not with Jarlaxle and his eye patch, though, and he wasn't about to take it off for ease of conversation, for they knew that more than one psionicist was about, and the others seemed not to be allies. Jarlaxle considered the question for a bit. "Yes," he whispered. "If they are here on behalf of Lolf, then so be it. The Hunsrans will not win this market." He peered around the corner again, then pulled back quickly. "They are coming," his fingers were laid to Kimuriel. Kimuriel extended his hand to Jarlaxle, who looked at it for some moments before finally taking it. He knew what was coming and he hated it. Oh, how he hated it. He heard the voices of the approaching enemies, nearer and nearer. But then they were suddenly far away, and the world about him became a hazy blur. The distinct lines of the glowworms crawling about the corridor caused a distant, fuzzy, blue-white glow. Kimuriel stepped past him, moving into the stone, pulling Jarlaxle right behind. Small spaces didn't bother Jarlaxle. He had on more than one occasion spent an entire day hiding in his portable hole, a lightless extra-dimensional compartment. But this wasn't a small space. He and Kimuriel were moving through solid stone, sliding in substantially through it. This wasn't a small space. This was no space at all, and no direction at all to Jarlaxle's sensibilities. Were they even still moving? Now fully within the stone wall, he had no frame of reference, had no visual cue that they weren't simply standing still, and with no resistance, no air movement, no tactile feeling underfoot or anywhere else, Jarlaxle could only hope that this strange friend of his had a better idea of it all than he. They exited the stone into the same corridor Jarlaxle had just traversed, but now behind the pursuing drow. They became substantial so abruptly that Jarlaxle almost tumbled over. "I did not expect you would wish a fight," Kimuriel remarked. "If there was one, I would have been alone," Jarlaxle replied, and the psionicist didn't disagree. "I would not battle a handmaiden except in defense," Kimuriel confirmed. "I am of House Oblodra, and would not bring Lolf's disfavor upon my family."
"I wouldn't ask you to."
"Are you not?" Jarlaxle looked at him, trying to figure out their next move, and realizing as the obvious choice came to him that Kimuriel already had. "Free the traitor gnome from the grasp of the Yokel," Jarlaxle bade him. Kimuriel stared at him. "Can you?" Still, the psionicist stared, then finally nodded. Jarlaxle led the way back to the corner. The Hunsrin priestess was still there, flanked by Hunsrin guards, facing the gnome, who looked perfectly terrified and miserable. The Yokel priestess, who had been beside Duquelve, however, was nowhere to be seen. The two crept nearer, listening to Duquelve scolding the gnome. "It is none of your concern. A band of thieves will be put down as they deserve. I will have the locations of every ward, every glyph, every guard."
"That was not our deal,"
the poor gnome replied, his voice faltering, his legs wobbling with weakness as he tried to argue. "Do it," Jarlaxle implored Kimuriel, snapping the communication off emphatically. "If there are repercussions," Kimuriel warned, "I will assume responsibility before Matron Mother Bayenry herself. I order you to do this in her name." Jarlaxle could hardly believe he had just said that. If these Yokel were here bestowing the blessing of Lolf on House Hunsrin, he might have well doomed himself and Breaken de Earth. He shook that thought aside and resisted the urge to spit on the ground. What did it matter? If he did nothing, Breaken de Earth was surely diminished, perhaps forevermore, doomed by this bold Hunsrin move. Jarlaxle's sanctioned activities would be relegated to the Cavern of Menzo Berenzon, a place Jarlaxle was coming to view as stifling as the stones he and Kimuriel had just floated through, and any unsanctioned activities beyond the cavern would as likely get him killed. "Do it," he said again with his fingers. He watched the Zverf Neblin then, who suddenly went quiet, cutting short his answer, and so again suffering the berating of Duquelve Hunsrin.
The fellow hopped from foot to foot, exactly as before, but his face twitched, his expression shifting, his eyes widening.
Well played, Jarl Axel silently congratulated Camoriel. We will meet again in the claw rift below your house.
Jarl Axel tipped his wide-brimmed hat to Camoriel, then took the hat from his head and pulled forth a small piece of black cloth. Camoriel nodded and smiled and melted away into the stone. Now Jarl Axel had to anticipate the coming events, and he didn't like the possibilities. He had to try at least, but he feared the little fellow surely doomed. He crept across the corridor, silent as a shadow, then rushed down a side passage, one that he knew ran parallel to the one from which the gnome had come. Some way along, he threw the black cloth, the portable hole, against the wall, and crawled through it into the other corridor, then pulled the hole through behind him, turning it again into a seemingly normal circle of fabric. Such a wondrous item. Jarl Axel padded along the tunnel, nearing the confrontation, drawing a wand. Too close to put his whip to use, Zachnefane had to face three swords and a dagger of his two drow opponents with only a single sword. A lesser warrior, an average drow warrior, would have been overwhelmed, or at least driven back into the room with Priestess Duquelve. Not Zachnefane Doerden, however. By all that the drow taught at Melee Magver, he should have played full defense, dropping the whip, drawing his second sword, and fighting a quick turn and retreat technique to buy him some breathing room. Instead, he blocked the lead sword of the drow to his left, then the stab of the drow to his right with a quick cut and backhand. He dodged the second sword from the left, accepting a stinging clip on his left hip, then ducked the thrown dagger, lifting his sword arm to deflect the spinning weapon before it came around to its point, and again took a stinging cut, this one on his forearm. Those two hits, though, gave him a step backward, and when the opponents moved to pursue, they met not the sword of Zach, but the whip. In that small space, he expertly set it into motion, snapping it in short order left and right in the air before him. The cracking sounds alone gave his opponents pause, and more than that, the whip left tiny tears before the material and fire planes of existence, with dribs of fire falling from the sky. He never hit either of the drow before him with the whip. That wasn't the point. He had their attention, both of them, on the whip and not on Zach's feet. A subtle turn and set launched Zachnefane forward, a final crack of his whip going forward this time, slicing between the two drow, cracking hard against the floor. The drow to his left glanced at that last crack of the whip, reacting by stepping out wider. She realized her mistake and swung back, lifting her swords defensively. Too late. Zach's sword stabbed above them, clicking off her fine armor and lifting to dig into her collarbone and the side of her neck. She fell back, stumbling, as Zach bulled forward. He didn't finish the charge, instead stopping short, slashing a wide and powerful backhand that drove through the second woman's single sword, catching her across her chest in the precise moment she was reaching for another dagger. She staggered to her left with a wobbly step, then dropped to one knee, her free hand coming up to her gashed torso. She looked at Zach and fell face down. Zach barely noticed, already spinning down into the maze of corridors, trying to put as much ground between himself and the Hunsrins as possible. A short while later, though, he came to a fork in the tunnel, and his thoughts screamed at him to go to the right. Too much so, he realized, and so he understood, too, that the source of that instinctual compulsion was neither instinctual nor internal. Someone was trying to manipulate him here, to drive him down that right-hand corridor, to try to slip past him back the other way, and likely with guards down the right-hand corridor, waiting to engage. Zach growled and started right, but skidded to a stop before he had taken his second step. The violation angered him, outraged him. The violator was to the left. Zachnefane, too angry and too powerful to be so coerced, went left. He saw the back of the deep gnome, hands in the air, pleading with Priestess Duquelve Hunsrin. The fellow was trying to twist her away from her desires that he fully betray his people, that he set them up for slaughter by answering her every demand with a question about what had just happened. "Who is that drow man who ran through here?" Duquelve told him it was none of his affair.
If the city isn't behind you, how can I offer that which you ask? The Zwerf Neblin tried to argue. Duquelve signaled to the two warriors flanking her to take him.
You will tell us what we want to know, she warned the gnome, one way or another.
The poor fellow shrieked and tried to run away, but the guards were right behind, reaching for him, and he couldn't outrun the agile and graceful drow. A globule flew at the shocked gnome, and he ducked. Though the aim had been perfect and the rolling, amorphous green blob would have gone over his head anyway. Over his head, but not over the heads of his two pursuers, who were too busy trying to grab the little fellow to see the viscous glob flying at them. With grunts muffled by a wall of sticky goo, the two stopped in their tracks and tumbled backward, and the goo that seeped between and around them stuck to the stone floor as it had to their faces, holding them fast. The gnome glanced back, any relief he might have known thrown aside in the piercing ring of another shriek, for behind him, Duquelve rolled her hands, head bobbing, lips moving in a magical chant, fiery energy building visibly about her fingers. The gnome turned and cried out in surprise, for the floor was gone before him, and he pitched headlong into nearly complete darkness. He landed hard and rolled about, looking up from the unexpected pit to the glowworms crawling on the ceiling high above. But the darkness closed around him as the edges of the hole came together, and then there was only darkness, complete and absolute. It didn't last long, as a blue glow revealed his newest captor, a drow man wearing a ridiculously wide hat. Be at ease, Simvin, Jarlaxle said, speaking the Zwerf Neblin tongue, and not the cruder and less precise undercommon typically used by the reasoning races of the Underdark when conversing interracially. And speaking it with such perfect inflection and dialect that had Simvin not been staring straight at the drow, he might have thought a burrow warden was addressing him. You're safe now and free of the magical domination that led you to this place.
You do understand that House O'Blodra survives at the suffrage of Lady Lolth? The Yawklal asked Camoriel. You are heretics, one and all. And yet Kjorl Odrin sits in a place of honor among the ruling council of Lolth City.
Not heretics, Camoriel telepathically responded. We worship no other goddess.
Atheism is heresy, as is agnosticism.
We believe in Lolth, of course. Are you not proof of her existence? Are not the magical weavings of the High Priestess proof of her existence? Camoriel argued.
You play a dangerous game, Odrin.
O'Blodrin, Camoriel corrected.
And how so?
I am here with Bregand Earth, a band covertly, even overtly, sanctioned by Matron Mother Ivanel Bayenri.
As you know well, handmaiden Bolifena.
And I serve Lolth directly, the Yawklal, now in the guise of a drow priestess, and one naked at this time, for she had just returned from the form of oozing black goo.
As does my sister, Ykardar.
That is not my concern, Camoriel said, cutting her short. I have no imprimatur to ignore the demands of Jarlaxle, who speaks for Matron Mother Bayenri within the movements of Bregand Earth.
Above the commands of a handmaiden, Bolifena asked, her telepathy conveying a clear sense of outrage.
You did not announce your presence to us, nor did you announce your intentions regarding the minor House Hunsrin to Matron Mother Bayenri. Or if you did, she did not think it important enough to dissuade us in our efforts here. Camoriel fought back, not giving a bit of ground. I did not know that I was dealing with handmaidens, but even had I known, I am commanded by Matron Kjorl to serve Bregand Earth as I would serve House O'Blodra, and thus am I bound. Why did you come here to do this thing?
That is none of your concern, handmaiden Bolifena retorted, and Camoriel sensed the change in her tone.
He had her back on her heels, illusionary though those drow heels might be.
The overall disposition of this dastardly intervention will be adjudicated by Lolth alone, so be not so certain of your correctness here. Beyond that, I warn you, if this goes badly for my sister, I will hold Camoriel accountable.
Camoriel didn't bother to respond to the threat, but neither did he mask his amusement to Bolifena. He understood handmaidens well enough to realize that she was no match for him. Their greatest powers lay in mental deception and domination, and Camoriel was far beyond them in that regard.
Find Jarlaxle and the warrior and call them back,
Polyphena ordered. Go home, Camoriel countered. The traitor Zerf Neblin is free of you. You have failed. House Hunsrin's bid here is ended. Polyphena glared at him through her drow eyes. Perhaps she wanted to communicate a bit more, but Camoriel shut the conversation down, shut her out of his mind altogether. So she stared. Then she assumed a true yokel form once more, a half-melted giant candle of mud, waving appendages wildly. From there she diminished to nothingness and was gone. Camoriel considered her last order to him, to go and stop Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane. He thought not. He turned for Menzo Berenzon. Zacnaphane sprinted down the tunnel and around a bend, not slowing. There she was, the other priestess from the first room, eyes closed, right hand lifted, and in a clawing position as she continued her attempt to dominate him telepathically, and from the looks of her, she thought she was succeeding. So did the man, the Hunsrin guard, standing before her, and he only noticed the charging Zacnaphane at the last moment. He gave a shout and lifted his hand crossbow towards Zac. A cracking whip took the weapon and wrapped his hand in the same flow, enough for Zac to tug him before disengaging the weapon. It wasn't a large tug, just enough to slightly bend the man forward, to slightly alter and lower the angle of his defense. To most, it wouldn't have seemed as much of anything, but to Zacnaphane, the opening was huge and exploited. His sword took the man in the gut, sending him sprawling aside, grabbing at his belly. He wasn't coming back into the fight anytime soon. You dare, the priestess scolded. Do you know who I am?
A dead priestess, Zac replied. Who you were before that will hardly matter.
You have doomed yourself, the priestess roared at him. Behold you, a handmaiden of the goddess of chaos. She continued to bluster until Zac cut her short, using his whip as an exclamation point of an answer, reaching it out to its full 8-foot length to snap it across the side of her face. He used the power of the whip as well, drilling a line of extra planar fire right through her cheek and into her mouth. She shrieked and fell back, staggering, a line of blood erupting from the left side of her torn face. Or was it blood? Zack's confusion about the oozing substance coming from the woman's cheek did not freeze him in place, quite the opposite. He had learned from years of battle that moments of indecision could be fatal, and so his reflexes answered his perplexed thoughts by propelling him ahead. But then he did skid and stop, when the drow before him was no longer a drow, when the yokel revealed herself in all her ugly glory, her priestess robes tearing apart as she widened and transformed into the roper-like demonic form.
Doomed foolish male, the creature said in a gurgling voice that sounded like the popping bubbles in a heated mud puddle. I am...
Zac leaped into the creature, springing fast between the waving appendages, driving his sword deep into the monster's torso. He dodged aside to avoid the vomit of muddy goo, tearing free his sword, then plunging it right back in. The yokel shivered and shuddered, flailing its 8 appendages, missing with almost every swing, but landing a few heavy blows on the weapon master. Zac ignored them, accepted them. Again and again he struck, determined to overwhelm the demonic creature with sheer ferocity. Then it was a drow again, naked now. Cheeks still showing the tear, the handmaiden leaped backward, then set herself strongly and jabbed a finger at Zacnaphane, throwing a powerful psionic attack and command, Stop! And he did, as surely as if he had been hit by a giant thrown boulder. The yokel stood straight and narrowed her red eyes. I will take you with me, she promised. Lady Lolf, Zac ended his feint. He had felt the telepathic assault, but it had not stopped him, and whipped her again across the face, then leaped in for the kill. But she was gone, replaced by a cloud of roiling green smoke and stench, choking Zac and burning his eyes. He knew he had to get out of there, and fast. Knew he had to find this demon before it played more tricks. He stumbled and swallowed the vomit climbing his throat. He had to get out, he had to get away. The cloud paced him, surrounding him, suffocating him, and only then did Zac realize the truth. The stinking cloud was not a magical spell, the stinking cloud was the handmaiden.
Zacnaphane waved his sword wildly, but the gas just swirled about it. He couldn't escape. He couldn't hurt it. He tried to call out and vomited. He tried to run and stumbled and dropped his sword. He started to reach for it, but changed his mind suddenly, and instead straightened and took up the whip in both hands, wildly snapping it back and forth, bringing tears in the material plane with every snap. Lines of fire dripped all about him, and bits of the cloud crackled and sparkled, the gas hissing in protest. His senses failing him, his eyes burning, Zack knew that to inhale was to falter, and so instead he screamed, a long and loud wail of protest and outrage, his whip snapping all the while, the air about him dripping fire. Then he was joined in his scream by the agonized voice of a yokel in its drow guise once more. Zack looked at her only momentarily, just long enough to realize that she was lined with sharp, burning gashes. The whip's violent work had crossed through her material forms. She turned to him as if to strike, but Zack had never slowed, and now rolled his whip across instead of back and forth. He didn't snap it this time, but let it roll around her neck once and again. Zacnaphane turned and yanked and leaped away from her, pulling with all his strength. The unwinding whip turned her, pulled her, threw her off balance and jerked her from her feet to flip and roll in midair, spinning about to land hard on her back. Zack let go of his whip, drew his remaining sheathed sword, then fell over her, plunging the weapon down with both hands into her chest. The yokel flailed and screeched. It reverted to its natural form only briefly before melting into a black ooze. And from that, Zacnaphane leaped back, fearing for his sword, fearing for his whip, which was under the goo. But no, this was not a living and battling ooze. This was simply the demonic creature melting from the material plane, back to the smoke of the abyss where it belonged. Out of breath, throat burning, eyes burning, Zack sat down heavily on the stone and nearly rolled fully prone. It took him some time to realize that he was not alone. He turned about to see the Hunsrin man he had gut-stabbed just a few steps behind him. The man stood straight, or tried to, but could not. His arm still wrapped across his belly, he dropped his sword from his other hand and held it up, pleading for mercy. Zack just stared at him. He had no breath to reply, had no strength to stand and face the man. The Hunsrin staggered away, Zacnaphane's glare following him every step, until he was out of sight, at which point Zacnaphane slumped to the ground and passed out.